We are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast. Woo! I am Patrick Schmaltz.
That was that? So enthusiastic.
That was so not enthusiastic.
Either be enthusiastic or not, dude.
That was like excitement.
Leave it out.
Is a little tiny
it's
excitement.
Enough to just say our name.
No. I think there needs to be a little cheer at the end.
A little cheer.
And no one cheer. No one cheers.
That's not in the name
so
of
So I have to cheer for myself.
Cheers. Cheer Self-cheers. Self-cheers are happening.
I'm Patrick Schmaltz with my two brothers, Christopher and Andrew Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
Hello.
Hello, Andrew.
Good evening. Hi.
We're brothers. We're geeks. We talk about geeky stuff. This is our podcast.
So much to cover.
We have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight.
What episode is this? 60?
This is 60.
Woo!
Oh my god.
60. See, that deserves a big woo.
Woohoo!
Yes, big woo.
Yeah. Dude, it's exciting.
So, 60 episodes. If you've been here since episode 1, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're sorry for those earlier episodes.
Why are we sorry for the earlier episodes?
Yeah, seriously.
They're
we're
all
sorry
gold.
About you. Well, those early episodes for sure.
Oh no. I was groping in the dark in those early episodes.
Groping in the dark?
We don't want to hear about your single life, dude.
Whoa! Shots fired.
That's below the
Shots
belt,
fired.
Sir.
All right.
The gauntlet has been thrown down, sir. That was ungentlemanly of you.
I can't even, I have nothing to say to that. I'm nowhere to go.
Nowhere to go. No way to spin that into anything strong.
So the Rogue One trailer / behind the scenes trailer dropped.
At 2:40, okay. 2 minutes, 40 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was more than that. It was. I think it was close to 4 minutes. When I saw.
Oh, really?
So, like, do you guys remember The Force Awakens did something like this too? They did a trailer, yeah. And then they did like a behind the scenes trailer that was like the slate clapping, you know, and it got everybody really excited. It showed all the sets. It showed a bunch of conversations with actors and like they. So this
they did
is like
the same thing. Pretty much, they did a behind the scenes thing that they showed at. Like a Disney convention event, D23 or something, because it was just before or some other kind of convention. They dropped footage that they showed at the convention, and then they released it online later.
Sure.
So this particular footage premiered at Star Wars Celebration Europe that they had last week at the big Rogue One panel, which had the entire cast and was moderated by, like, I think, Gwendolyn Christie actually moderated it, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's
great.
Yeah, yeah, she was probably there for, you know.
Well, I mean, she's part of the Star Wars universe now, dude. So she's involved, like, and Gwendolyn Christie's great.
Even though her character is like kind of pointless, and
we don't, dude, who knows? She might have a larger point in the new movie.
Hopefully she does. It's interesting to me that it was a behind the scenes trailer because, like, if somebody just shows a trailer for, let's say, okay, a trailer that got dropped today was Triple X, the Return of Xander Cage. If they showed a behind-the-scenes trailer of that, I feel like no one would give a shit. You know, it's like, oh, okay, you're making a movie with Vin Diesel. But because it's Star Wars, everybody's, like, crazy, you know?
Well, yeah, we have the most devoted fan base in the world. I mean, it's Star Wars and Star Trek. Are the two most devoted fan bases, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question there.
For a hot minute, there was lots of Lord of the Rings stuff. And there's still like some devoted people who are... But there's no extended Lord of the Rings fandom anymore because the Hobbit movies were terrible. So they bungled their fan base on that one, I think.
But, dude, you're thinking... I mean, we're hovering around the point in the sense that... They did this behind-the-scenes thing, but they gave us – I mean, they alluded to a lot of stuff in the movie. They confirmed some things in the – you know, in
still,
this behind-the-scenes.
Still no Darth Vader.
Still no Darth Vader, which we're – I mean,
there's
we
definitely
going to
be Darth
appear.
Vader. Yeah, we see Grand Moff Tarkin. There's got to be Darth Vader in this movie. Like, it's going to be great.
Well, I mean, raise your hand if the – behind the scenes and just what you saw gave you goosebumps and chills.
Well,
raising your
hand is not good for radio, Andrew.
Amazing.
This is we're reverting back to like episode 2 for you, Andrew.
Exactly.
Groping in the dark.
Groping in the dark. Nobody can see me. You don't know what I'm doing right now.
Oh God. Don't make the listeners turn off their podcast. Oh my God.
We just got an explicit tag.
Okay, great. But
I was gonna say these videos, there is a real risk associated with these videos, especially for this fan base, because if you put something like this out and it falls flat, the internet rises up against you.
Well,
right?
I mean, the Ghostbusters remake is a test to that. The first trailer got panned hugely.
The internet rises up, and so this fan base, it is a huge risk because you have to hit it.
You have to knock it out of the park.
The naysayers and everything else will come out and be freaking out about the fact that it looks. I mean, just the rumor of reshoots.
Oh my God!
A few months ago,
everybody panicked
into a frenzy, and it was a panic. Oh my God, the movie sucks. They're reshooting. Blah blah blah.
Every movie reshoots.
Realize they need extra footage. They realize they need some particular part of it might not be working.
Editing, and he doesn't have quite the shot.
Right. Or they feel like there's a storyline that gets left unfinished.
A little bit. Yeah. I just need 30 seconds of footage.
Yep.
Yeah. But that turns into three weeks of reshoots, and everybody flips out.
I read it all. The freak out over the reshoots was hilarious because there's like 4 days straight of articles about, oh my God, the movie's terrible.
Yep.
Right? Because they're doing reshoots. Well, that's the problem with doing a spoiler or a sort of behind the scenes teaser kind of thing, which is if it falls flat, it's oh my God, especially for this franchise, people would freak about it. And the payoff, of course, if you do it well, is that it gives you goosebumps and
everyone gets
hyped for it. And this just hit it out of the park. This video makes I've seen it anyway, but
yeah,
it makes me so excited because of the imagery and the tone and the commentary and the energy, all of it evokes, and you're immediately reminded. It has such a great look in that it's a modern movie that evokes Episode 4.
Mm. Yeah.
And I love the idea of that it evokes Episode 4 and the look of it and the sort of touchstones that sort of speak to the memory that we all have about seeing Episode 4. And that's why it's so effective.
It looks like, from the footage that's shown, it looks like a lot of battles.
I was actually going to comment on something like that. Initially, I had the impression that this was a heist movie.
Yeah,
that
that's what I thought,
too.
It was
a Star Wars movie about a robbery set in the Star Wars universe, which is fine. There's certain tropes that are associated with the heist movie, and fitting that into the Star Wars universe could actually be really entertaining. But given this behind the scenes,
there's so much battles.
I wonder if
explosions actually, and stormtroopers.
It feels like a war movie. Like you have ground troops. Like you're not. I mean, the Star Wars movies tell the story of two particular galactic civil wars that happen, and they're how they, the original Clone Wars and the Rebellion. But whether or not this feels like the Longest Day.
We're exactly thinking the same way. I think it's a war movie where
it's like the Dirty Dozen or something
behind enemy lines.
It is a war movie with
clandestine shit happening.
Exactly.
Straight up evokes all those World War II movies where you're in the midst of a war. And there are battles all around you, and you're making your way behind enemy lines and dressing up as the Nazis and trying to get those plans for the battle plans. Where's the attack going to be? Shit like that. It evokes all of it, and it even
takes place on like a tropical planet beach setting.
It evokes all of that.
Right. It gives it very like a.
Reactor. It's like, this yeah, is a World War II movie.
Yeah.
Behind enemy lines.
Yeah,
I just,
totally.
And the idea of that just is freaking awesome.
Spies in World War II. You got right.
Those movies are great. Dirty
Dozen is like the perfect explanation, Andrew. I feel like that is like the movie.
If they pull that off and it's like that,
yeah.
Oh my God,
it's gonna be great.
It could be incredible.
It's
film.
So great. Really good. It's so great. Do you guys have anything else to say about that? Because we have a lot of news to cover.
We do.
No, I just watched it. If you haven't seen it,
yeah, we'll put a link
in the show notes.
We'll put a link so you should watch it. Really interesting. We're super pumped about a standalone Star Wars movie, first one of its kind of a thing. So
yeah.
And the beauty of it is that we all have in our imagination as kids and now as an adult, we all have filled that story in, right?
Yeah, right.
In terms of how did they get what? It's a one-off or two sentences in Star Wars
right.
about
yeah.
Many Boffins died, blah blah blah. And we all like, whoa!
Oh no, dude, you're getting your time. Year that's Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, that's when they stole the second plans. Yeah,
we don't know how the original Death Star's
exactly.
plans were
you're
stolen.
Right, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, but you're right there though. So how did it happen? Yeah, we don't know.
What I'm interested in is like what is the rebellion without Luke Skywalker? You know, pre Luke Skywalker, what are they doing? I'm really
they
curious.
They were clearly
about...
fighting the Empire.
Exactly.
I mean, losing to the Empire.
Right. You know, and doing their best to stay alive, and I think that's super interesting because they're just like hoping, you know.
Very cool.
And I mean, all of the promotional stuff that you see too. You'll see posters on the internet. The tagline for this movie is "A Rebellion Built on Hope."
That's so great, I just got chills.
Oh, right?
Yeah, man.
Feels so good. check this out. Just keep this in the back of your mind. This is coming out at Christmas.
Oh
my
God!
We only have 6 months. Think about it.
That's
remember
so
how
great.
We used to chomp
less
at the bit for Star Wars movies?
Are you going
to
start a countdown,
like Star
Andrew?
Star Wars movies come out in 4 years.
Where's your countdown for this movie?
It's going to start.
Right now.
Dude, but think about that. We are going to get a Star Wars movie a year for the next 5 or 6 years.
That's awesome. If they keep making good ones, then that's awesome.
Exactly. Anyway, yeah.
All right. Rogue One, what was 16. The other stuff? You had stuff, Andrew, right?
I thought I did.
Comic-Con is this week.
Comic-Con's
this week.
We are not going.
Comic-Con.
We are not going.
Starting this week. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah.
Lots of. The best thing for me with Comic-Con, even not going, is there's just so much. They announce so many things. There's so many films. There's so much footage. They do a lot of pilot tests.
There's an unprecedented amount of footage coming out of it.
Yeah.
Like it's there's panels streaming on Twitch
totally.
This year.
Yeah,
oh yeah,
right.
Sci-Fi's doing live coverage
a recap show of all the best stuff.
It's great promotional.
Three or four nights, I think, aren't
they?
They start
Thursday night. They're doing 4 days of coverage. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So
it is it has, rightfully so in my mind, they have expanded the ability for people to see content and get content for people who can't attend. I mean,
exactly.
We've attended many times, and it's an incredible experience, and we love it. This year, not going. But we'll still be able to follow and follow. You can follow it all on Twitter, and I love following this stuff. I mean, my Twitter feed just goes insane.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I follow so many people who are there or who will be attending or who will be live streaming.
Or celebrities that are tweeting about the event. Or,
nice,
you know,
right.
Yeah, it's just so much information.
You find those hidden gems, too, and when you just click on a hashtag, SD, you know, CC 2016 or whatever the hashtag is going to be.
Yeah.
And you find somebody who... You know, you don't follow them, but they hashtag it, and it's a random person who took a photo on the convention floor with.
There's going to be a dude sitting in Hall H, the front seat, who's not going to leave all weekend. Like, they're going to stay in that chair as long as they can, and they're going to tweet like crazy because they're level 5, and that's what a level 5 does.
Well, it's the Geek Super Bowl, man. It is a weekend.
Geek Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I always, when I try to describe what San Diego Comic-Con is to, you know, people who have no concept of what a convention is like, I say to them, it's like, imagine what happened in Phoenix a couple years ago when we had the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Now imagine that's every single year mm-hmm. in San Diego.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. They have a Super Bowl every single year in July.
And
that's
and,
what
well,
happens.
And think of the and here's the thing. Think of the weak sauce that is the fan fest around the Super Bowl that yeah. was in downtown Phoenix. You know, it was sort of one block and there were a couple stages and they did some stuff in the convention center.
Yeah.
But you could exhaust Fan Fest in downtown Phoenix in a few hours, unless yeah. you were staying for a show or blah, blah, blah. I mean, it really wasn't that much stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's – it, and that was what? The Fan Fest for was a week? Was it a week downtown?
Yeah, it was the –
if I remember right.
Or at least a couple of days leading up to the show.
Yeah. I mean, Comic-Con is the is a confluence for 4.5 days of
yep. –
crush of people and so much content and stuff to see and do and view. You can't see it all. You
yeah.
have no chance.
It's impossible
no
to get
of seeing it all.
Yeah.
Every single level of geekdom is there. Every
absolutely.
Single genre. Yeah. That's, it's amazing.
It, I love it. It's a
yep.
great
time. Yeah. We'll probably be talking about that in the next episode. I remember something that you told me today, Andrew. Season 7 of Game of Thrones got announced for summer 2017.
Yeah.
So
we
I mean,
speculated that it was going to be pushed back. It seems as though it'll be at least 2 or 3 months. Cause
well,
they
usually do March, right?
They
so
late March,
that's
early
the,
April.
Right.
So my guess is we'll see it June or July next summer.
And that's not bad. That's not
it's not bad.
Bad. Yeah.
And they did HBO did confirm that the next season will be 7 episodes.
7 episodes. And a lot of people are kind of disappointed with this, but you know what? If they're really tight 7 episodes, I'm okay with it. You know, just really move the story
well,
along and finish it up.
The upside to the fact that they confirm it's 7 episodes means that season 8, the last season, will be potentially 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And the two showrunners have indicated for quite a while that they felt the season would that they felt the series would go 75 episodes. So they have a particular idea of what they want to accomplish in these next 15 episodes.
There's like a plan of
they have
of
I'm sure they have it all broken out
right.
in terms of what they need to accomplish over
yep.
the next 15
so
episodes.
The storytelling should be particularly tight in my
oh, it'll be very
there's
tight
not
and
there's not going to be a filler episode in
no way. Yeah, so
too much to get through.
Yes, it'll be a long wait, but I foresee it to
hopefully
very much be worth
hopefully
it.
Before that point we have Winds of Winter.
We
hopefully.
Can keep saying that. Let's just
let's keep saying that.
Let's just keep
put
saying
that out
that.
Into the universe.
Yeah,
with
exactly.
Hope. With
hey George
hope.
R. Martin,
no
it's Comic-Con
no
weekend.
Negativity.
It's the perfect weekend to announce when Winds
right.
of Winter is going to be published.
Yes, please do it. No, stay home and write.
Exactly.
Stay
please
home.
Finish
writing.
Yeah. Don't
well,
he, don't die.
Did George R. R. Martin say a couple years ago that he doesn't go to cons anymore because all he gets from people is questions of when
yes.
Winds of Winter will be published?
Yes.
He can't appear in public anymore. It's terrible.
People give him shit about being there.
Exactly.
He gets shit for attending because they want him to be at his home
writing
the freaking book.
He can't. He can't even like leave his house.
No,
that's
no way.
What are you not doing in front of your computer
exactly.
right now?
Why are you not
away? I don't care what you. I don't care that you have to eat.
Yeah, or sleep, or poop.
Go write. Go write and finish the book.
Get a catheter.
Some of the same shit now because he's you know, taking so long to write.
Yeah,
Christopher, you were talking yeah. about also the pre-patch for Legion.
Yes.
Did you download it?
I have paused
for
the download.
I see. I
wanted to mess up the internet stream, but I am in the middle of downloading right now.
Mm.
It was almost an 18 gigabyte patch.
Whoa. Well, this game is getting huge, right? I
yeah.
mean, when I was playing, it was enormous. It was like 40 gigs. So.
Oh, yeah. No, the files on my computer, it's up over 100 gigs.
It's over 100?
The entirety
yes.
of WoW is 100 yeah. gigs on your
it's
computer?
It's over
right
100
now?
Gigs, yeah.
Wow.
Jeez.
That's huge.
With all the patches and everything. So, sure. Yes, patch 7.0.3, it is the pre-patch to the Legion expansion, and I'm in the middle of downloading it now. And
when does Legion drop?
Late August.
Okay, so they're just like laying the groundwork. Any kind of problems go wrong, this basically...
Well, it makes major changes to the game.
Right, right.
The patch makes major updates to all the classes,
mm-hmm.
changes significantly the current gameplay, and changes significantly garrisons and dungeons and raids and other things, all in anticipation of what will be another patch that will be just before Legion drops, which will tee up all of the events. This is their style now, is they do a patch leading up to another one that has content that leads up to the Legion.
Oh yeah, like a quest line that leads to the events that happen in the patch.
It tees up the events. It sort of teases. Oh my god,
Blizzard is so smart, man.
They're really good.
They know really how to make fun, interesting games, and that's why this game has gone on for 15 plus years.
August 30th is the date for when Legion.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, you'll have to.
So I will finish after we get off the podcast. I will finish downloading it, and I will be immersed in it tonight.
Next episode, I'd love to hear from your thoughts on the new patch.
I will.
Excellent. Let's move on to some scene, unless we have some other news.
I think that covers everything we really wanted to cover.
Excellent.
Christopher,
you were saying you saw Ghostbusters.
I did.
You're the only one that has seen Ghostbusters.
I have seen it.
Well, of the three of us, obviously.
And loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Funny, very entertaining. It hits all the Ghostbusters. It's not like revolutionary in terms of new sort of stuff.
Right.
But it is a Ghostbusters movie through and through. The cast is hilarious. The story's good. Obviously, the modern graphics significantly enhance the viewing experience in terms of what you see on the screen. It looks great.
This is my worry, is that it's just like a CGI like throw up. Like,
nope. It's not a CGI throw up. It is used very effectively and selectively in those moments where you expect to have interactions with ghosts. It never once breaks your immersion.
Ever. That's cool.
It's really well done. And again, I go back to the main point. It is funny. The cast is great. Awesome. The interaction is great.
I want to see this so bad. I've just been so busy, man.
Yeah, I'm going. I enjoyed it this weekend.
Cool.
Is it comparable to the first one? Are you like, because I feel like the first one has this legendary status, and that's why the internet was so worried about this reboot.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's enough? Did they do a good enough job to that people won't be pissed at them? Or
yes, they clearly did enough for people not to be pissed. The legendary status of the first one, if you do a rewatch of that, it's not that funny.
Yeah.
The first one, it's really not. That's maybe sacrilege to some people.
Oh,
but
man.
Bill
Murray kills it in that movie.
I think
the movie has funny characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily like they tell a lot of jokes.
Right.
Yes. And it's an iconic. I love that the first one. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
This current one is absolutely, it's so much better than Ghostbusters 2.
Oh yeah, Ghostbusters 2 is terrible.
It's a pile of shit.
Abysmal.
And so it wouldn't take much to be better, and so I don't want to give it short shrift. This current movie is a very good Ghostbusters movie.
Awesome.
I wouldn't say it's better than the first one.
Right.
But it is a very good
movie. I just don't feel like, I mean, because Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd are just so, and like Rick Moranis is so good in the first one, and Sigourney Weaver,
dude, is so she plays the straight character, and she's this.
Awesome.
She's great. I mean, think about how...
I'll tell you this. The cameos in this movie are...
I bet.
Ooh,
I've heard, I definitely heard that they're all the cameos perfect, throughout.
Perfect. Perfect and funny and really well done.
Awesome. That's a pretty ringing endorsement.
Excellent. Yep. Excellent.
Go see it. Go see it.
Andrew, what do you...
I'm not
done
with scene.
Oh, whoa.
I have to report on... I don't know if I've mentioned, and I don't know if we've discussed. I've been watching Preacher.
Oh, yeah.
Have you all been watching Preacher?
No, I have been watching Preacher.
I have 13 episodes on my DVR that I have not watched.
So it starts – I'm very much enjoying it. It is worthy of your time, boys.
Yeah.
It is – starts slow. Like – for someone, and you all, I don't know if you read the book or read part of the book.
I've read all the comics.
Okay, so it starts slow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it takes 4 episodes to even sort of start to explain what it is that went into the Preacher.
Right.
Oh, wow.
It is. It's a slow burn. And you gotta sort of navigate those first 4 episodes, because damn, it's a slow burn.
Oh, wow.
Is this a Robert Kirkman property?
Garth Ennis wrote the comic.
Oh, Garth Ennis. Okay, yeah. I know that name. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He was big in like the late 90s, early 2000s for comics. He wrote a lot of Punisher stuff. He wrote some Daredevil stuff too.
He was a Marvel guy for a while.
Marvel guy. He got kind of
The Preacher book is aggressively profane.
Oh yeah.
Not for kids.
It's a lot of violence, a lot of nudity.
The TV show is substantially tame.
Right.
Well, they got to get away with what they can pay
for basic
paid cable.
Part of the appeal of the comic, I think, too, is that it was so different than anything at the time. Everybody was super... I feel like in the late 90s, early 2000s, comics started to really like, hey, we can tell other stories besides superhero stories.
Right.
And like Preacher was one of those things.
That was really the time of the big creator-owned explosion
right.
where you had all these marquee writers.
Image doing their own thing. And you know, saying screw you, Marvel and DC, we're gonna write our own stuff, and we're gonna publish the books that we want to do, and I think Preacher is one of those things, like along with Sandman and what else? I mean, this is earlier than this, but like Alan Moore kind of like set the precedence for this with like V for Vendetta.
Right.
And Watchmen, you know, posing these questions.
We're getting further. I mean,
sorry,
TV series.
The show does a good job of capturing the tone and mm-hmm. the quirkiness of the book. And it takes a while to sort of ramp up, but we're in the meat of it now. And it's really good. And it's asking all the questions.
Have you finished the first season?
No.
Okay, so you're in the middle of it. Okay.
The show asks all the questions that are suggested by the nature of the book in terms
okay.
of the preacher questioning faith and human existence and the existence of God and is there a plan and all of that wrapped up in this interesting tale about some supernatural shit and a being that may or may not have possessed the preacher that mm-hmm. could be the most powerful being in the universe. So it's cool stuff. And it's worthy of taking the time to watch it.
Yeah,
cool.
I'm definitely going to check it out. But
yep.
I'm down with it.
Yeah, no, it's all on my DVR.
The other scene I want to recommend that I cannot recommend highly enough is the show on CBS called Brain Dead.
Okay. Dude, you are fully
into the show. All over this show.
What is
all
it?
Right.
Tell me.
Shit, is it funny? And good and quirky and dark. It is.
You love the dark stuff, man.
Have you read about the premise of the show?
No, what is it?
It's set in Washington, D.C., and it's about like this alien invasion where they take over.
Set in modern day Washington, D.C., modern day Earth.
Uh huh.
And a meteor is dug up and then transported to Washington, D.C. for study. And during the transportation, it breaks open, and out from – and I don't want to do any, give any spoilers for all of you, because it's not that far into the season, and you all need to be watching this. So the premise is that it's set in the contentious times of the day, political tension, Washington, D.C., completely dysfunctional, blah, 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 right? So it's set in modern American political culture. And
with aliens,
with ant-sized aliens that invade your cranium and get rid of half of your brain and take over
what,
or take over your body, and you become whatever personality you had before. You become the extreme version of that.
So, oh my god!
Just okay. For example, the bugs take over the brain of a right winger who's sort of a drunk and a longtime senator and kind of given up and totally jaded, and they come in and eat half his brain. Or actually, they don't eat half your brain, and you watch this happen. They shove half your brain out your ear.
Oh my god.
Okay.
It is an awesome scene, by the way. And okay. And then he becomes like a transformed, high-energy crusader for the right wing and becomes even more strident in his politics. And the same thing happens with a senator on the left, where she is invaded and she becomes even more strident on the left. And then it's – it mixes in that the West Wing to the extreme, while also being an alien invasion story where people, staffers on the Hill, scientists yeah. who live in D.C., all of them are like, there's something going on.
<That's> oh, so my weird. God.
It's so weird. It's so funny. And just – it's dark because there's stuff that happens. You're like, what? Yeah. But it is – it's. I find it hilariously entertaining because it attacks all perspectives. It's commentary on every side, all extremes. Meanwhile, the people in the middle are trying to figure out what's going on with these people, because the funny thing is that if you are of a personality that resists the aliens that are in your head,
your head
explodes.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And this happens in front of a couple characters of the show, and they're like, what? They can't process it. If you saw that
yeah.
in today's age, there's no way you could process it. So anyway, I am current on that show. I'm loving that show. I'm all right. over it. Watch it.
All right.
Awesome. Andrew.
I don't have nearly as much to talk about as Christopher, just because I've been – I kind of
– Syndrome.
A little bit. I went and saw The Shallows. It's kind of outside our wheelhouse a little bit. I mean, it has the genre of being a shark.
I feel like horror movies are part of the geek.
It's definitely horror yeah. tropes because yeah. it's got some gore and it's scary. It's a highly entertaining movie.
This is what I've heard. This is what I want to see this.
And not for the basic kind of stupid boy reasons of
Neanderthal
Blake Lively.
Boy.
Blake Lively is an extremely attractive woman, and she's in a bathing suit through the whole thing. She's very, very good. She spends most of the movie stuck on a rock, on a beach, interacting with a CGI shark, and she does a very good job of conveying kind of the desperate nature of it. It's a story about human will. It's very entertaining, and I totally bought into all of it. It has some kind of cheesy moments, which horror tends to have, but I enjoyed it very, very much. And there's this kind of this meme going around the internet about how the breakout star of the movie is the seagull that's trapped on the rock with her.
I've seen that,
and it is
what is
totally
the seagull?
True.
What's
she interacts
with the seagull?
The seagull gets injured, and she gets kind of stuck on this rock during low tide with her. It's really funny how she has to kind of
seagulls passed away. So she's like talking to Wilson. Like,
basically, that's exactly where I was going with it.
Right. She has it's the stand-in for the volleyball. Really?
Exactly. But it works.
And it's like, but it's like exposition for her thoughts, because she would just be thinking all the things that she's saying.
Dude, it sounds really dumb.
And react. It sounds really dumb. It's not.
Here's the thing, though, is like, I've always been kind of afraid of, like, sharks in general.
Dude, I don't like, dude, I'm with
from my childhood
afraid of very little.
Right.
I do not like water where I can't see the bottom of it.
Totally.
I just don't.
That's what it is. It's like when you are not touching the bottom and you can't see what's underneath you, that freaks me out.
And, a little bit, yeah.
And so, like, so I love watching shark movies now because, like, I know I'm not in an ocean, you know, but you put me in a boat in the middle of nowhere, I'm going to be a little afraid, you know, just a little. But like shark, this movie looks great. And I've heard
it was fun. It's worth the 90 minutes that you spend.
I love when you can boil like a story down to like, it's, you know, just a girl on a rock stuck because there's a shark out there and she can't swim to the shore like that. I love, it's just a simple concept and you go for it.
She actually has an emotional arc that she goes through in the course of the movie.
Awesome.
And it's a believable situation that would lead her to be in a place where she's on this beach and she's surfing and she gets caught up in this moment where she, you know, of this, she has these constant challenges she has to overcome to save herself. And, It's entertaining. It's an entertaining movie. It doesn't try to be any more than it really is, and it works on a lot of levels. So,
great. Do you have?
I have one other thing to talk about, and it's not really in the genre, but there's a TV show called Roadies that's on Showtime.
Okay,
it's written and directed by Cameron Crowe, and it tells the it's about the road crew that are on tour with this fictional American rock band.
Okay.
And Luke Wilson and Carla Gugino are the two leads. They're the tour manager, production manager. It reaches into me because I'm a rock and roll music fan. And the cool part of it's got interesting characters, and you know, it's fun so far. It's not really that deep, and it's right in Cameron Crowe's wheelhouse, because one of my favorite movies is Almost Famous.
Oh yeah,
and that's all about, you know, people's love for music. Cameron Crowe, what's that?
And coming of age.
Exactly,
coming of age.
And that's got
music.
Similar tropes in this movie.
Right.
I mean,
self realization.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of that going on.
That's like every Cameron Crowe movie.
I don't disagree. Sometimes they're much more effective than others.
Mm-hmm.
The first few episodes, I have been entertained. The best part of it so far is that the show, because they're on tour and the tour is kind of a mess at this point, they keep having to replace opening acts for this fictional rock band. And the opening acts they are having in the show are real rock band artists.
Mm.
In one episode, they have an artist called, unpaid promotion. His name is Rainwolf.
Okay.
And he's got a couple of songs on iTunes. He is freaking great.
Oh, wow.
Rain, like King Rain.
Okay.
That's been kind of the fun, cool part of it, is the fact that I've learned about these cool new musical artists through this TV show. So it's been fun so far. There's only a couple.
This is on Showtime, you said?
It's on Showtime. It's on Sunday nights. It's fun. It tells kind of simple, straightforward stories. Mm. It's got some funny parts and some dramatic parts. But yeah, no, it's not too deep, but it's been good so far. So I started watching that over the weekend, and I'm enjoying it. I'll keep watching it. It hasn't lost interest for me yet.
Oh, that's awesome.
Roadies.
Great. So Netflix dropped a new original series, Stranger Things, which I watched. There's 8 episodes. I've already watched them all.
Wow.
I haven't even started.
Start to finish. Let me just set this up for you. This kid named Will Byers goes missing from some kind of creature taking him. You don't really see what happens. It's the first 10 minutes are awesome. Just go watch the first 10 minutes, and that was enough for me to be like, I need to know what the heck is going on.
Oh, wow.
So
it totally sucks you in.
Sucks you in.
All right.
And But that's not the best. The story of this show is not the best part of this show. The best part of this show is it is an 80s horror movie homage. It is E.T. mixed with The Thing, mixed with Cujo and Firestarter and like all these like Stephen King, Steven Spielberg, you know, John Carpenter movies all mixed into one, and it is so entertaining and so well written, and wow. I think it's like so good. I loved it. I loved it. I want to rewatch it. Like I just I finished it today, and I want to rewatch it again.
Oh man, okay.
Because it's so because I love that stuff. I love, you know, I was in, you know, prime time of movie watching when I was young was like the 80s, and watching all these like old horror movies, you know, watching The Thing with Dad, you know, when I was like super young.
And I remember the Thing scaring the shit out of me.
Exactly. And I think
that shit out of me.
Exact. And like E.T., you know, and it has all these like these tropes that are so good. It's got this synth score to it that I love. It's got these characters that are, they feel so comfortable, and it takes all these tropes, these like character tropes from the 80s, and like turns them on their heads. You're like, you're seeing this like jock character, and you're thinking, this guy's like the bad guy, this guy's the douche, but mm-hmm. like, and then they like really dive deep into like his character and like who he is and why he's doing all this stuff. It's not just like this superficial like glaze over. It's like you understand the character better, and the mom is like played by Winona Ryder. She's so good. There's this moment in like episode 6 where her character is so amazing, and it's like, wow, this is really good TV show. Like this is really good television.
Wow.
And
that's good. I, you know, Winona Ryder, she's had kind of some trouble in the last few years, and it's nice to her to hear her having like a role that she can really kind of do well with, because right. she's become kind of a joke. I mean, she had the shoplifting thing a few years ago and hasn't really had a lot of good work. She's been kind of a joke of herself.
Right, right.
It's kind of cool that she's got this thing where she's able to do such good work with it.
I can't remember his name, but the main guy who plays like the cop in it too, he is so freaking awesome in this movie or in this show.
Have you seen him in anything else?
I'm blanking on it. He's like in a bunch of stuff as like a side character. His name is David Harbour. Let me see what
the name isn't popping out at me.
Right, right.
But it's only 8 episodes, and you're done with it already?
Only 8 episodes. I mean, they're 45.
Does it feel like it'll lead to another season, or is it just kind of they did a miniseries on Netflix and it's over?
It does end on a cliffhanger. I'm not sure if they're gonna do not like a huge cliffhanger, but there's like questions. You're like, what? And so I hope they do another one. There's kind of like a wrap up of the story in this, so I'm not sure. But I could see them going in a direction where they do like a completely different cast and in a new like a new storyline, kind
like
of
it's
thing.
An anthology series,
right?
Type?
Like kind of like American Horror Story does, where they.
I have never watched one episode of American Horror Story.
I tried to watch the first season and I wasn't into it. It's just too weird and I didn't like it. But I know what they do. Their whole thing is like one season is like story, and right, and then they change up the cast the next season, and it's a completely different setting, completely different time. So I could see them doing something like that for season 2. So I don't know if they'll extend
this. There's theories online that all of the seasons are connected.
Oh, really?
Yep. Of American Horror Story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt that.
They're all set in a similar world.
But they're not even set in a similar world, that there are ties between every season.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah.
I want you both to go watch the first 10 minutes of this show and then give me your response.
I got to.
Like, I got to wait for the patch to download. So that's exactly what I'm
you can't watch it tonight.
Dude, yeah. it's so great.
I'm going to watch it while the patch downloads.
Oh, do it.
Slow.
Dude, I really want to know what you guys think of this, because I think it was fantastic.
We'll watch, and we'll come back.
All right,
we'll watch, and we'll come back.
That's pretty much it for my scene, so we should move on to some play. Or, Red. Andrew. Andrew, what do you have for Red?
You guys know I read slow. I am still reading In the Name of the Wind. The Name of the Wind. Not
Name
in the
Name
of the Wind.
Yeah.
By Patrick Rothfuss. I am just scratching the surface of the tale being told by this really interesting character. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Christopher, Kvothe. You might be able to help me with this. Is it
Kvothe?
Kvothe. Okay, Kvothe. I was pronouncing him ahead as Kvothe. So no, Kvothe is the main character in this story, and he is telling his own tale to a certain person. But the way that the chronicler, the way that they set up who this guy is, and they give you little tidbits of what he's capable of.
Yeah, even, awesome.
In the first 75, 80 pages, before he really starts to tell his own story and his own history, you get these little tidbits of what he's capable of. People, what they say about him and how powerful a magician or wizard he was, and kind of the kind of figure that he was in the world. And then through his interactions with this chronicler, you realize that he's a genius. Not only is he extreme, he's like this extremely powerful warrior / wizard. He's a genius level intellect. Like, the chronicler is really impressed at how quickly he can figure out this writing system the chronicler created to write
shorthand.
His own shorthand. Yeah. He figures it out in no time at all. And the chronicler's like, this guy is like scary smart. Cause how the way that the author reveals information about this guy is done so well, and it's very deliberate, but you're sucked into the moment with everything that's being revealed about this guy. And it is really, really interesting storytelling. I've never read a fantasy story told this way, and it's working in so many ways right now. Like, just the language is so, it's great. It is legitimately a great book on so many levels. The characters are strong, writing's great. And how everything is being revealed just sucks the reader in very, very deep. I can't recommend this book enough right now.
I love the juxtaposition. I mean, it is an examination of myth versus reality.
Yes.
And that you will get to. There are multiple instances of that theme.
Yeah.
And always reinforcing the idea of the unreliable narrator.
Yes.
And that is working on multiple levels through the book at all times. It's complex but well told.
Yep.
And pacing is good.
Yes, the pacing is
good. But it has
great.
All of those layers, because Kvothe, the Kvothe of the myths is very different. You learn it's mm-hmm. very different from the Kvothe of the real world, and is very different from the innkeeper Kvothe, and is very different from the unreliable narrator Kvothe.
Well, and I had this thought today about the book.
It's so good.
I had this thought, and I don't know how deep I am into it, and whether or not it's just a flight of fancy that I had. I was thinking about the images of wizards that have existed in fantasy literature, you know, Merlin and Gandalf, and how they're always kind of these people that are these beings that are apart from the society the story that's being told. You know, Gandalf comes in and out of the story, and he's this immortal being that is kind of a caretaker of Middle Earth. And Merlin is kind of the same thing in the Arthur legend. He's, you know, he shepherds along Arthur, and he, you know, the joke about him is he can live forever and he can see the future, and
close,
you know, he's the most prescient. Kvothe feels like, you know, he's a bigger than life character, but he's very grounded at the same time. So it'll be interesting to see how they expand on this idea of him being this extremely powerful character. It's clearly a magical story, but at the same time, you've encountered him kind of on a self-imposed exile. At least that's what it feels like right now. Like, what kind of – where does this character get to the point where he imposes his own exile or he goes into hiding? Like, what happens in his life when this all-powerful wizard type has to go into hiding or has to exile himself? It's an amazing idea.
It's all about the storytelling.
Exactly.
There is a question as to, in the wider world, as to whether or not Kvothe is even alive.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah.
Oh, whoa.
It's great. It's been so good so far. And it's dense, and it's good reading. It's good language. Yeah, no, I can't say enough.
Wow. Good. All right.
I'm two-thirds of the way through Wise Man's Fear, and it is better than the first one.
Fantastic. This book series sounds great. Is there actually three out? How many are out?
No. I think he's in the
currently working on the third.
Wow, so this is like really new.
It's like George R. No, it's mid 2000s is when the first came out.
Okay, yeah, first book is like 700 pages. It's very
long. Okay.
Yeah, it's a tome. A heavy tome.
Yeah, right.
Second one is longer.
Yeah.
Cool. And the third one will be longer.
Jeez.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's what I got.
Christopher, what do you got?
What do I got?
For red.
What do I got for red? I'm listening to Wise Man's Fear. Mm. Awesome book. I am reading Seven Evas, which is the Neil Stevenson.
It seems like you put that down for a while. I've picked it back up.
I am working my way through. I'm going to finish it now because I finished a couple other things that I was working on, and now I'm turning back to, because Sean mentioned it to me that he was reading it, and so that inspired.
We gotta have the legendary listener on pretty quick here.
We really do. We really do.
We're in episode 60. He's only appeared once. We gotta get him back.
Come on.
Come on, Sean.
Get it together.
Yes. Get it together, man. Let's get it.
Need to have him on.
Maybe when the new when does Legion drop? It drops in August. We can schedule.
August 30th.
Yeah.
Once he can play that and he can get involved in a new episode after that.
We should get his take on that. So I'm reading that. I'm also reading a comic book, independent comic book series that I picked up at Phoenix Comic Con. I finally got around to working my way through this book called Morningstar. I think I mentioned it to Andrew.
You did.
This independent guy, writer and artist who is producing his comic that is called Morningstar, and it is a tale of Lucifer and other archangels in a sort of a quasi-Western setting where Lucifer and the archangels are the, for lack of a better term, sheriffs of the land, and they are in heaven, but they have settlements in heaven where they have to, God created, the first of God's creations went bad, as in demons, devils, creatures, other things, and then Lucifer and the other angels are there to defend the other heavenly beings who are in these settlements, and so it's a westernized Western, as in the old West Western.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an odd sort of mashup of those tales, and I'm a couple of issues in, and it's trying to find its footing, and it's an interesting idea, and some things pay off, and some things not so much. And so I have the first five that I picked up from this guy at Phoenix Comic Con. So I will report on those and keep working my way through those.
Cool.
Sounds interesting.
Morningstar. Do you remember the name of the writer?
No, I do not.
Okay. No problem. I can look it up. But Morningstar. Okay.
All right. Cool. I continue to listen to Abaddon's Gate. all the chapters and storylines are leading to them going to this gate, and and so far it's like a, you know, everybody's traveling. This is all these people. I am genuinely like excited for when they get there, because I feel like shit is gonna go down. Like,
shit goes down.
I feel like it's gonna just like
shit goes down.
I feel it's gonna be nutso once they like what's behind the gate. What's what happens when they all get there? What happens to these characters?
Are you past the point where somebody tries to go through the gate?
Well, I mean, the guy
that's
in the beginning
chapter, the belter goes
ballistic. The first chapter, he's like flying at the gate, and he like vanishes, or and like he slows down so much that he like dies, but the ship is still there. I guess is what they were just talking about. Like the guy's dead inside, but the ship is still like through the gate.
Okay.
So yeah, it's it's like this slow build. I see what they're doing. And it's like, I would say that it's a little, like, boring, but not, but like, I know what's happening. I know that once they get there, that shit's gonna get real.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm waiting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a book that really focuses on Holden and his evolution, right?
Yeah.
And is, like, coming to grips with what's going on with him.
Yeah, like, Miller keeps appearing to him and trying to, like, decipher Miller's, like, basically riddles and like and you know giving him like tips, but he doesn't really know what they mean, and trying to figure that out is really interesting.
On a side note, just because you made me think of it, this will be quick. The Expanse season 2 is currently in production.
Yeah.
And there's been some posts on the internet.
Yeah,
of
I saw those.
Set photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actress Frankie Adams, who is playing Bobby Draper.
Can't even wait
for her to appear on the TV show, because
I just can't wait for that show to come back. Like, it's so good. Like, one of my favorites.
Not even through the first book.
I know.
The shit that happens at the end of the first book is freaking bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, I can't wait for that.
The first season is like, they stop the first season when the first book starts to get really crazy.
Really crazy.
So next season is just going to be nutso.
Like, insane.
It's just got to be the craziest crap ever, right? I mean, that's basically what's we know what happens.
I read that, you know, there's like twisting the storylines. Bobby Draper appears in episode 1 of season 2.
Oh, she's going to be part of the first.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, because she sort of
they're going to do the opening scene of the second book, dude.
Oh, really?
That's the case.
Well, I mean, that's okay that they mix that in, because it's kind of like...
It is. It's going to be freaking
It kind
great.
Of works. It kind of works, because that scene is so crazy.
It really is. Anyway,
I'm enjoying that, but it's sort of like, we're going to the gate. This is the trip to the gate, and I just, like, that's where I'm at.
Cool.
Let's move on to some...
Wait until it.
I know these books.
Bonkers.
I know these books. The first two books are so crazy, and so, like, it comes out of left field, and I know that that's going to happen. It's totally... Yep. I'm in the third book, so I have no doubt that it's going to just, like, melt down in a minute. So,
it's good.
Christopher.
Yep.
What do you have for play? I think we all have a shared plane, and the whole world has a shared plane.
We do. In fact, I was on my vacation when Pokemon Go dropped, so I did not. And I was in Canada, and I did not want to download the game while I was in Canada.
Oh yeah,
with my spouse.
Totally.
And so I was late to the party, but reading all about it in the Twitter feed, my Twitter feed was blowing up. And so when I got back to Phoenix, I immediately downloaded it. And yes, I've been playing Pokemon Go by myself, but also with Kira.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the park by our house, and we walked around, and
Moon Valley Park.
I've been playing the hell out of it.
Oh yeah.
So, what level are you, Christopher? Yeah, what level
Six.
Are
you? What level? Team are you?
Mystic.
Team Mystic. Ugh.
What are you, Andrew?
Team Valor.
I'm Valor also.
Yeah. You know who else is Team Valor?
What level?
I'm level 8.
Okay.
Patrick?
I'm 13!
Are you shitting me?
13!
Dude, how much do you play?
Just a little bit every day, and I know how to level now. There's tricks, man.
There is tricks to level.
If you evolve Pokemon, you level up quick. Get rid of all your extra Pokemon and level up your Pidgeys like crazy. I have like 4 Pidgeys that are like next level because Pidgeots, you know? They become like this. So that like levels you up a lot. When you get your lucky eggs, use the lucky eggs.
I've had a lucky egg drop.
I don't think you get one until late, your first one. You get a lucky when you get incense. Use your incense when you see somebody using an incense node. You go to those. You collect all the Pokemon.
The lures.
Yeah,
that's the best part. Yeah. Moon Valley Park has become the joint to go. That's okay. And I've been playing Pokemon Go. Obviously, I heard about it actually watching some Twitch streamers, and I downloaded it. The best aspect of the game for me so far is the fact that you have to walk to incubate eggs.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
So it forces me out of my house. Like I walk.
Well, that's the thing with this whole game, dude. Is like everybody's going out of their house to play. You know, they're not sitting in their place. This is the beauty of this game, and I'm hoping that this like starts a new thing, and that's video games in reality. This is augmented reality. Right. Because these things exist in reality and they don't move, like you have to go to these destinations to find this stuff. It's this great thing of people getting out of their house to play, you know, and interacting with other people who are playing, you know.
Yeah, no, that's been really fun for me. It's a bit of a drawback, the fact that Chris and I live in Arizona, and you really can't be outside during the day.
Yeah, it's a billion degrees right now.
It's 110 degrees, yeah. And you get a sunburn in 20 minutes, and an hour walking around when it's 110, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. So I have got my miles on. After the sun goes down at like 8:30,
yeah.
I go for like an hour run walk.
Yeah,
to hatch my eggs.
Yeah, that's great.
That's been the fun part for me.
I went for like a jog one day, and I had like a 10K egg going, and normally I just go for a run and I run, but this time I like plan my run to run to nodes.
Yeah.
And as I'm running, I'm like picking up the app and I'm like, oh, there's one over there. And I like turn and like run towards that thing. And then like stopping, picking up the nodes or like picking up a Pokemon while I'm in the middle of I'm like running, stopping. But it's like I hatched a bunch of eggs. I ran to a bunch of nodes. I picked up like tons of Pokemon in this like 1 hour, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was so fun. It was so fun.
And have you ever played any other Pokemon games?
I mean, I played some on what system was that? It was years ago. Yeah. It never really took off for me. I feel like I missed.
Watch the show?
I watched Indigo League, which was the first season or the first series. But I didn't watch it like religiously because I was in high school at the time. Yeah. And so I was a little aged out. I feel like it was just
a little aged out of it. I got
right,
you.
Right. So I knew of it, and I had friends who were into it, but I never really like. I was too interested in like girls and that whole thing. You know, trying to figure out. But I had friends of mine who were super into the card games. Card games was like huge, the video game, like the.
Well, I think Samurai Comics still hosts Pokemon Card Nights.
Totally,
I think they do. Yeah,
that's like, I mean, Pokemon, the Pokemon card game, and the Pokemon for the Game Boy. There's been so many like Pokemon Game Boy games that they're really popular in a certain group of people.
Oh yeah, they're very. Chris, have you ever played any Pokemon games besides Pokemon Go?
Never.
Nope. Yeah, and you never watched the show.
Never watched the show.
I mean, literally. I mean, because the only I knew the name of a couple of Pokemon. I knew Pikachu.
Everybody knows Pikachu.
Yeah, everybody
he's
knows
cute
Pikachu.
Little round
Charizard.
Yeah, there's Charmander, which is the first one, and then Charizard is like an evolved form.
Dragon,
exactly.
Which I still haven't seen a Charmander.
I have not seen a Charmander either.
I have a Bulbasaur. I have a Squirtle.
I do not have a Squirtle.
I do not have a Pikachu.
I have a Pikachu.
That's awesome, dude. Those are rare.
I caught him at LA Fitness the other day.
I haven't even seen one.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, I was at the gym working out, like a real human gym, because the game has gyms where you can go battle. But I was at the gym, and I was between sets. I was working out or whatever, and I pulled my phone out just to give myself a break from working out, and I pulled the app up, and there was a Pikachu. And I'm just like,
So the funniest thing is, like, I was shooting this commercial on this set, like, on Thursday, Friday, and right on the set was a node, and there was a couple of guys there
Pokestop. Yeah.
And a couple of guys there were into it, too. So in between, like, takes and, like, running around, they're popping, like, the lures on this thing. And so we're all, like, stopping and playing while we're shooting this commercial. And it was cracking me up. And I got I didn't have to go anywhere. And it's just you bring up your phone, you hit the lure,
into the servers. I mean, the game isn't perfect. It's glitchy as hell.
No, it's glitchy as hell. It's crashing me a billion times.
Crazy.
And it's frozen in the middle of catching stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been irritating. And, I mean, it's not perfect at all. But I just don't think they realize how popular it's going to be.
I don't think they anticipate server traffic.
This is, like, next level, like, game. Like, no other game or app has been this popular. I mean,
They certainly weren't prepared for how quickly it was a success.
Like, can we ask the question of why we think it is?
Nintendo's share price, Nintendo is the parent company that owns Pokemon. Didn't their share price went up by, like, 120%?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Something insane. The value of the company went up.
And it doesn't say Nintendo on this app at all. It's made by a different company. They probably just like get a percentage of the purchases. But like, you know, this is a free app that you don't have to pay for. And I know there's no ads yet. And all the revenue that they made from it is people buying lures or like
make any in-game purchases?
No, I have not.
I have not.
You know, I spent $1 because I ran out of Pokeballs.
You ran out of Pokeballs?
Yeah. No, I spent 99 cents.
Dude,
I was on tilt trying to catch a couple Zubats, and I wasn't good.
Oh, my God.
And I spent 10 balls apiece, and there was one.
You guys haven't even gotten any greater balls, have you? That's like any, later. I think you get those after 10. Greater balls help you catch like the tougher ones, so you throw like.
Oh, no. The most frustrating part is when you're encountering Pokemon and you're catching them, and then you encounter a Pokemon that's a little more powerful than your level, and you get him in the ball, and then he escapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, what am I doing wrong?
It's a problem.
You get things later on where, and if you notice that circle, when you touch the ball, the circle starts going. It starts going in and out. It like pulsates in. If you hit it when it's at its smallest in that circle, you're much more likely to keep the Pokemon.
It's considered a great shot.
Right.
Yeah. If
you're having trouble with a guy and your aim is good, and if you hit him like dead center when that circle is at its smallest, he's less likely to pop out, which is really cool. Like there's like a skill to this.
There's that skill part.
You know, it's just not like walking around and like you throw it and you get it every time. Like
you're guaranteed to catch it.
I have had Pokemon run away on me.
Oh, so have I.
And so I feel like, you know, it's interesting. It's fun. I've been walking my dog around the park near my house, like, a bunch.
There's a meme that I saw on the internet about a dog. You know, it's got a picture of a dog or whatever, and the text on it is, you know, you've walked me 5 times today. Can we just stay at home? And then it's, you know, it says something about Pokemon Go. It's like, ever since you downloaded Pokemon Go, you've walked me 5 times a day, and I just want to stay at home and lay down.
And there's like a treasure hunt aspect and a leveling up aspect.
It's like geocaching.
Yeah, exactly.
It feeds all of those. Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing that people are getting out of their house. And, you know, I've had like pleasant conversations with like strangers who are doing the same thing. And I think it's great. I don't know how long the popularity is going to last.
I feel like it's going to wane. Yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
Aren't they just in the beta?
Isn't
there more aspect of the game that's supposed to come later?
They've announced that they're going to, you know, patch it with trading, and there's going to be eventually like player versus player, like challenges,
real-time
battles. Like you can meet up with, like you and I could be standing in front of each other and we can challenge each other to a fight. Instead of like going to a gym. They're saying different stuff. So, you know, it could get better, or, you know, it'll definitely wane over time.
The initial heat will wear off it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have ran into a bunch of like older people who have heard like, I was at Verizon Wireless and I'm talking to the girl checking me out about Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
And she's talking about playing it, and there's this like older couple that is listening to us talk, and they couldn't help but chime in, like, not getting it. They're like, "Oh God, I just don't understand why all you guys are playing." I get it. It's fun, you know. And they just
it's seriously the most silly app I have on my phone.
Totally. And everybody's embarrassed to talk about it, but everybody's playing it, so who cares?
Dude, I don't think there's. I work in a cube farm world. Mm-hmm. People in their late 20s, early 30s, into 40s. I might be the only person I know that at my work that's playing it though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Literally, I mean. There's a couple of hardcore gamers in my office, and I think I'm still the only person who's playing
it. I doubt that. I highly doubt that.
So they're just not talking about it?
They're just not talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything else for played? I have one small thing.
Go for it.
Overwatch, for the PC version, patched a new character, the first new character from the game's release, Anna.
Yeah.
And they also,
I saw that. Yeah.
They also changed a bunch of... they changed a bunch of characters to change, you know, patched them and nerfed some and enhanced others. They enhanced one of my favorite characters, Zenyatta. This has not been released on the console yet, but so far they patched for the PC and then a week later they patched for the console. So I'm hoping that they'll have this patch by next week. Because I'm curious to play Anna, because she's kind of like, I like playing the support characters, the healers and helper characters, and she's a support sniper, which I think is interesting. So
how would that game mechanic work?
She has a gun that shoots and damages enemies, but can also heal.
It like gives
shoot
a buff?
You shoot
your teammates and it heals
it's
them.
It's like it's a dart that gives you like vitality.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
And,
okay.
And her super makes it so other characters are like tougher for like 5 seconds, so they have like extra shields, extra health, extra damage. So she's like a helper character, but she can also stand back and like keep, you know, damage people also, which I think is which is really cool. So I'm curious to play, and like Blizzard makes great games. This game is fun. Competitive game is really fun, even though I'm terrible at it. And it's
as long as you're having fun, man.
That's what I'm saying.
The whole point is. It's Iron Banner and Destiny this week, and I am not a good PvPer by any means, mm-hmm. but I'm still having a good time playing it.
That's awesome. All right. What do you have for trivia for us, Andrew?
Chris, you got anything else?
Anything for played?
Nope. I was, like I said, I was away from my game playing apparatus.
Oh, I've got one other quick little thing that I can comment on.
Sure.
I'm further into Halo 5 playing through the campaign.
Oh, cool.
It's pretty straightforward gameplay. I like it. It looks great on the Xbox One. The familiar use of the Halo weapons, the battle rifle and the assault rifle and all that stuff. The levels I've played recently, I haven't encountered a lot of Covenant, which is a bit of a sad thing because I like fighting the Covenant. I've been fighting a lot of Prometheans on the last couple of campaign levels.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they're fun, and they're different from Halo 4. They've got different classes to fight. I've only encountered one boss fight, and I'm playing on normal, and I went into it with a heavy weapon, a rocket launcher, and I was able to take out the boss pretty quickly. It wasn't actually that challenging. So I was a tiny bit disappointed in that, but I'm not playing on a very high difficulty level. So that was a little underwhelming, this boss fight that I encountered.
Well, I feel like you're kind of expecting the Destiny boss fight.
A little bit, yeah. So it was a little underwhelming that way. But it's been fun. I'm enjoying it. I am about halfway through the campaign. You know, campaign levels take, 20 to 30 minutes to get through. So they're not – I think the whole campaign ends up being about 10 hours. So I'm probably about halfway through it at this point. So
Excellent.
Yeah. I had a good time with it. Yeah.
So, trivia.
Trivia. It is, surprise, surprise, Pokemon-based.
What?
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go. I love it.
Pokemon, which is short for Pocket Monsters, in case you guys didn't know that.
Pocket Monsters.
Originally was released on the Game Boy in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Wikipedia, there are 7 different separate gaming generations in the Pokemon franchise.
Okay.
So, as of today, on handheld gaming consoles, how many games in the Pokemon franchises have been released?
How many games?
Total
many
games.
Pokemon games on handheld.
Total games on handheld
devices.
I feel
if you get within 5, I'll give it to you.
Oh my god! So there's like 20 something. That's how I feel. There's like, I'm gonna say 22.
22? Okay.
22 is my... There's a lot.
I'll say... 18.
You guys are actually really low.
Oh, my God.
Just on handheld devices?
Just on handheld...
Just on the various iterations of the Nintendo Game Boy.
Yeah.
There have been 38 separate
God.
Pokemon devices.
This is why this game is so popular.
Yeah, dude, 38? Literally... 38, according to Wikipedia, list of Pokemon main games on handheld. There's 38. There was in the late 90s, there's one a year, but there's a couple of years where there's 3 Pokemon games a year.
Wow.
For the Nintendo DS, there was 3 games released in 2008 alone.
See, I remember one of my friends being really into like Pokemon, like Red or Yellow or Blue. Yeah. Like those were like the really, really good ones. I feel like
those are early iterations.
Those are like the first colored ones.
Yep.
And people like really loved those games because they have tons of gameplay. You literally are walking around just trying to find Pokemon in the game and catching them, and like there's tournaments, and you could still be playing one of those games right now. That's how much content are
there. I'm looking at what's listed on Wikipedia for the Nintendo DS and the 3DS. There's 20 games.
That's so nuts.
Yeah, there's 20 games.
Yeah.
And that's not even counting like the Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Color, the original Game Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the 3DS. There's been like 20 games.
And I remember them having like a couple for the N64.
Oh,
like,
yeah. No, there's a whole dude. That's why I said handheld games.
Right.
For console games, there's been 12.
Jeez.
There's been 12
console
games.
We're talking 50 plus like Pokemon games.
Yeah.
That's insane to me.
It is insane, man.
If you are so inclined, their Pokemon Indigo League, which is the first tale of Ash Ketchum and Misty and Brock on their adventures is on Netflix. So you can watch all of the Indigo League, which I tried watching a few episodes, and it's pretty bad. Like it's
clear we've all aged out.
Yeah, no, I mean it follows
it's
like
made
the same
for 11-year-olds.
No, it totally is made for little kids. But like Christopher, you could show like Kira, Indigo League. There's tons of episodes, and Pokemon XY is also on there, which was released last year, 2015. With updated, I haven't watched any of it, but from just the screen caps on Netflix, it looks like it's updated animation, and Ash is still, he's like a little older, but he's still like a kid, you know, but it seems pretty interesting. And if you're enjoying Pokemon Go, you might want to go watch a little Pokemon.
Expand
on
the universe.
Exactly.
A little bit.
And plus it makes it fun because there's you playing the game and you don't know anything about these creatures, and then you go watch the show and it's like, oh, they're talking about Squirtle, or they're talking about like a Pidgeot, and you're like,
cool.
You're like, oh, cool, and there's a Pidgeot, there's a Zubat, oh, that's fun, and they're just like little here and there characters.
Cool.
If you'd like to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. If you'd like to comment on the show, you should email us at brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. You should follow us on Twitter at brothers_geek@twitter.com. And then, of course, brothersgeek.com for all of your episodes. And then iTunes and Facebook and all that stuff, too.
Oh, yeah.
We're all over it.
All over it. So
all kinds of social media platforms.
Yes.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Good episode.
Never forget.
What are we not forgetting?
I forget. Oh, wait.
Wait.
Oh, I just remembered.
Here it goes.
On shot first, people. Wow. On shot first!